What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen. 411 Teen is a weekly program for teens and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that confront, intersect, and sometimes interrupt our daily lives. Outdoor activity participation increases significantly in the summer months. Kids are out of school and enjoying various activities such as swimming, boating, cycling, hiking, and the list goes on. Whether they are young children or teens, parents must keep them safe and healthy while they enjoy the summer fun. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield, and joining me at the roundtable, I welcome Gina Olson. Gina is the Community Development Administrator for the Department of Children and Families.
Hi, thank you for having me today.
Appreciate you coming. Megan Reimer. Megan is a health educator. She is with the Florida Department of Health in Leon County.
Hello, I'm excited to be here.
And Courtney Atkins. She is the executive director of Whole Child Leon.
Good afternoon.
Glad to have you. And I'm just looking forward to all the valuable information that you can share. I want to start with heat stroke awareness, because that just seems to be something that's always glaring in the summer. Heat stroke awareness, did you know that 57 degrees is the lowest known outside temperature at which heat stroke can occur? It occurs about every 10 minutes. Let me do that part again. It only takes 10 minutes for a car to reach deadly temperatures on an 80-degree day. What tips would you offer to parents concerning heat stroke deaths of children? And I'll just go around the table because I'm sure you all may have something to share. I'll start with you, Gina.
Yes, well, the Department of Children and Families, we have an initiative called Look Before You Lock. And it's ensuring that before you lock your car, that you're looking to see if there are any children still in your car that you may have forgotten to drop off at daycare or at camp. Maybe it was a new route you took or something that just made you think a little bit different that morning. So we recommend doing something to either trigger that memory, to look before you lock, possibly putting your pocketbook in the back seat with the child to make sure you need your pocketbook for the day. So let's put that in the back seat with the child. You've heard silly stories of putting your left shoe in the back seat, but just something that reminds you to look before you lock.
Well, it's like whatever works.
Right.
You know, and you know how it is being, you're busy, you're running out, and you, not that you don't care about your kid. You know, you run in here and you run in there and you, oh, I'm running late. And it just kind of goes over the head. And then I read a story where a guy, I guess he got to work or someplace and realized he had left his child in the back of the car. I guess he caught the train in. And, you know, at least he remembered, and they were able to get a child, and it was no problem. But you do see how that happens, and it's not like you're a negligent parent, that you really don't care. You're just caught up in the demands of the day. Yeah.
Or sometimes if you're breaking your routine and you're not typically the parent that drops off, that can also be an issue. I think it's important for parents to be aware that what an adult's body can endure, or what is, you know, children are much more fragile, especially young children. And so being in a hot car in a hot place, first of all, they shouldn't be alone anyway in the car, but being aware that their body is maybe not as resilient or is going to react in a stronger way to the heat.
And I think often parents may think, I'm just going to run in here for a second. And they get in there and, you know, they get caught up. They become distracted, they forget, and lo and behold, you have a disaster.
I was just going to say that I think we need to realize that we're not invincible. And like you said, it doesn't mean that you don't love your child. That even it can, I mean, we look up stories and sometimes it is neglect, but most of the times it's not. And taking that step to realize we're not invincible and putting our shoe in the back, doing something to remember, I think is a big step to just realizing it can happen.
And just even talking about it like we are, it makes, it kind of stirs you. You think, oh, okay. And it may make you a little bit more aware, you know, or conscious of what is happening. Because, again, I think that people most of them don't do it intentionally. Mm-hmm. Okay, I know the stats. I read a stat. I think 80% of the time it occurs, it's with, you know, little ones. They're mm-hmm. age 2 and under. You know, the older ones can say, hey, wait a minute.
Yeah, they fall asleep. They're really quiet. We don't see them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So those are all the kind of conditions that parents need to be aware of. Anything else you'd like to share? I love that, putting the purse mm-hmm. in the mm-hmm. back of the car, or putting your briefcase or whatever it is, so you'll have to go back there. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you'll notice it. That's a great one. Anything else that you might share?
Another suggestion would be if you have a friend or a relative taking the child to summer camp or to daycare for you during the summer, mm-hmm. is just touch base with that person and just say, how did the delivery go? Did everything go fine? Mm-hmm. Any concerns when you got to daycare, to just make sure, because you know that that's not a typical errand or something that mm-hmm. that person has to do. So always, you know, following up with that person who's helping you.
That's a great suggestion. Mm-hmm. And that kind of jostles your memory, like, oh, I left them in the car. I mean, hopefully that's right. not what happens. Mm-hmm. But that all of that is just a reminder of what could have happened and what you might want to avoid. Heat-related illnesses happen when the body's temperature control is overloaded. That's basically what is going on. Children up to 4 years of age are at risk. And I think about heat-related activities, I'm thinking about outdoor activities, because this is something we're going to see more and more. Sunscreening is a big deal. And having sunburn and heat stroke, they kind of go hand in hand. So yeah, any tips about sunscreen and heat-related?
Just before you go out in the sun, make sure it's at least 15 SPF
okay.
so that we're being protected. And even if you're going to be in the shade and you think you don't need protection, that shade from a tree is not protecting you from all those rays. So make sure that we're still putting that sunscreen on. It's really hard in Florida to wear pants and long sleeves in mm-hmm. the summer because it is so hot. But if we can cover up with hats, pants.
And shirts. I think it's important that people of color recognize that they also mm-hmm. need sunscreen. You know, yeah, the melatonin does, you know, protect you somewhat, but you can still burn. Mm-hmm. You can still get skin cancer. I mean, that's what Bob Marley died of, okay?
Yes.
So you can, that does happen, and you need to know that sunscreen is important. Courtney, did you?
I think coupling all that with staying hydrated, and so many mm-hmm. times, especially in unstructured mm-hmm. kind of programs, if kids are in the neighborhood mm-hmm. playing or there's not an adult around all the time, just trying to really do your due diligence to let them know how important it is to stay hydrated with water, make sure that there's water available to them, and mm-hmm. that you encourage them to take water with them when they're going out or in for camps and those mm-hmm. kinds of things.
That's very important, okay? Because kids may not tell you that I'm thirsty. They get out, they're playing, they're running, and they don't even realize that they need hydration, mm-hmm. you know, until they come in and they're about ready to fall out.
Or maybe they've had a soda. And
oh, that's not what you want. You don't want soda.
Yeah.
I wanted to talk about first aid kits just briefly because I think it's something we always tend to overlook. But first aid kits are really important. And could you share, whomever, what a well-stocked first aid kit is? I know and I'm just thinking, okay, I don't mean to put you on the spot. I see nobody can see you, so they don't see those faces that you make. But, you know, I'm thinking of, you know, but kids get lots of scrapes and cuts and some kind of antiseptic, you know, some kind of Band-Aids. I mean, just... Is there anything else that you think is important that they should just have in the car?
Mm-hmm. I think they should have ice packs.
Those ice packs
that you can break and they mm-hmm. cool down. Mm-hmm. Some kind of compression bandage that if you needed to have some kind of pressure on something mm-hmm. bleeding heavily, and then antibiotic ointment and mm-hmm. Band-Aids.
Mm-hmm. And that's important, and it's real simple to get together, mm-hmm. and parents need to have that. I mean, you might just be out on a picnic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, it can be utilized any place.
And you can make your own. You don't have to go buy a pre-made first aid kit.
Yeah.
I had one in my trunk made out of a little fishing box mm-hmm. and put it in there. So use whatever. It can be cheaper to buy the things separate and put them in together.
And obviously EpiPens, if you had a child with them. I mean, this is summer is the time for stings and being aware of that.
Yeah. Anything else? Okay. Water safety, and I want to try to cover all of them. Hopefully we'll be able to. But water safety is really paramount. It's just, can't say enough about it. We talk about swimming pools and lakes and sinkholes, and all drownings are increased in the summer months. I think the first thing, and I would like to have you respond to it, is depends on where the child is swimming, because there are different conditions. If it's in a swimming pool as opposed to a sinkhole, as opposed to a lake, or, you know, the
open drainage ditch in some of our neighborhoods.
That's true.
We've had children drown. I'd like to, this is a subject that's really near and dear to my heart. And Whole Child with some partners, Gulfwinds Track Club and Titus Sport, we started a multi-sport club for kids, and really the whole purpose behind starting it, and one of our key reasons was for swim safety. And these are African-American kids, and we know the swimming rates are very different than their white counterparts. And our first year of the club, we had 15 children, and none of them swam. And these are kids 9 to 14 years old. I mean, didn't want to put their toe in the water. Hadn't been exposed to it. And by the end of the summer, they all swam and ended up completing a triathlon because they did other things too. But
that's fantastic.
But programs like that really trying to – we live in Florida, and so we need to do a better job at ensuring that kids have access to swim lessons and
what do we have here available in Leon County? Where children can take access of learning how to swim, being exposed to the water, all of that makes a big difference. And I know there's a significant difference, as you mentioned, between black and white youth, at least at the state level. At the state level, for black youth, it's 2.1, and for white, it is 1.7. Per 100,000, and I just wondered if there were any efforts that any of you were aware of to change this, to address this big discrepancy between those who know how to swim. We're going to take a brief break, and then we'll return. If you're just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen, and we are looking at summer safety tips. We're looking at water safety and talking about swimming pools, and so we were just talking off air about what was available as far as being able to teach young black youth, because we find that they really, their rate of dying and or drowning is much higher than it is among white. And you were saying, Courtney, that all those youth that you took with Gulfwinds, none of them knew how to swim.
The 15 of the multi-sport club, not one.
Not one.
And, and they feel so empowered by learning, and then now they can enjoy the city parks. Jack McLean Park has a pool. Myers Park has a pool. Living in Florida, it's a wonderful thing to
it's
know.
It's almost a necessity.
Exactly.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Now, are you aware of where one may go to learn how to swim? Gina, you were talking about the Y.
Yes, absolutely. I would definitely contact the YMCA and then also the city parks to see if they have services available this summer for swim lessons. But the YMCA is a great partner and low income and, you know, potentially scholarships available. So I would reach out to them.
Okay.
Yes.
Any additional information? I know that drowning, you find it more among children ages 1 to 4. Mm-hmm. More deaths. And I found it interesting. It was more deaths among children 1 to 4, with the exception of everything else except birth defects. You had more deaths. I mean, that's startling.
Mm-hmm. Is that for Florida? Yes.
Yeah.
I think a lot of that is, again, kind of like what we were talking about earlier with the heat in the car, leaving in the car. Mm-hmm. Parents, you know, turning their head at a, you know, when they have a pool or at the pool or at a birthday party when there are lots of kids in the pool, and it's just can happen so fast. So it's really making sure you have all those safety precautions in place when children are around, young children that don't swim yet are around pools.
Mm-hmm. The stats were that 2 to 3 children drown daily.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just overwhelming.
It's high. And I think we always talk about layers of protection. And like you said, supervision is the first layer.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a group and one mom wants to be on the phone, have someone that's designated to watch the children and they're not texting, because it really takes a second for drowning. It's not loud like we think it's mm-hmm. going to happen. It's quiet. And so just having that person.
And it can happen any place. I mean, mm-hmm. it doesn't have to be a swimming pool. We're talking about swimming. But mm-hmm. it can be in a bathtub.
Mm-hmm.
It can be in the toilet. A bucket.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, wherever there's a couple inches of water.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think parents, you know, have a false security maybe when they think, oh, they're just taking a bath. They're in the bathtub. They're playing. Mm-hmm. You know, it's only a couple inches mm-hmm. of water. But that's all it takes.
Mm-hmm.
So making them aware, and supervision is extremely important. That mm-hmm. was one of the tips that the CDC mm-hmm. recommended. Okay. In addition to just physical things you can do within your home.
Mm-hmm.
The fence around the pool. There are some contraptions that you can do where if somebody falls in the pool, there's a big alarm.
Mm-hmm.
And I've read pro and con to that. Some are saying that's good. Some are saying that it's not good. But in addition to that, the one thing we haven't talked about is CPR. Because at least, you know, if that does happen, hopefully it wouldn't, you want those individuals around to know CPR. So I was wondering, can you all share where parents and adults can take CPR classes?
I know there's an event June 11th, and the fire department is now doing what they called press the chest. And so you're not getting a certification, but it's mm-hmm. just for families to be able to know how to give CPR, and they also, I think they will receive a mannequin where they can teach the rest of their family CPR as well.
Okay, so. And now where is that again?
I'm not sure where it is. It's with the fire department.
Oh, so they probably could contact
mm-hmm,
the fire department. You know,
mm-hmm.
So those who are listening, if you're interested in CPR, what about the hospitals? Do the hospitals offer CPR and Red Cross? And you know, I was just wondering, any of those organizations you would think would mm-hmm. offer CPR?
I know that the hospital offers CPR to parents of children in the NICU,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
young babies that have had a poor birth outcome, prematurity. I think that's standard for any parent that's had a child in the NICU before they go home. They are actually
it's great,
but I don't think it's for every parent of every child, but.
Mm-hmm.
I do think the Red Cross offers CPR classes as well, so you could probably go on their website and find out.
What? And you may not know, I'm not putting you on the spot. What about the health department?
We are also working with Chest the Press. We're having an event in the fall, but currently we don't offer.
Okay. All right.
So I think a good contact would be Leon County EMS mm-hmm. because they're the big sponsor of the Press the Chest.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So those listening, we've given you some places to check out if you want to learn CPR. Recreational boating. That's another, all kind of goes hand in hand with the water safety and the drowning. And I know there are over, 100 different types of boats, from canoes to kayaks to paddle boats to you name it, they're all there. But can you share various activities or things that we need to do to make recreational boating safer?
The first thing that comes to my mind, I think, so often with boating, and I think there's some research to show this, there's alcohol use by adults
Good
on boats,
point.
And I think I've read something about the boating accidents, you know, alcohol's involved, you know, the majority of the time. So I think being careful about that.
And that's with the adults.
But having kids with them and not...
Having kids with them, right. I mean, so that's something, that, the adult behavior that they would need to change.
And definitely, I mean, the same as the safe swimming is knowing how to swim and then
good
having
point.
Those water watchers, having those adults identified to be watching the children and the teens who are in the water.
Life preservers.
Correct, to have everything that they need, but to also identify that, you know, I'm not going to be drinking, I'm not going to be playing on the phone, I'm not going to be eating, I'm going to be paying attention to these children while we're on the boat and while we're, you know, swimming if we're docked or something.
Something I learned last summer was the carbon monoxide off the back of the boat. A lot of drownings happen that way, and they're really quiet because you're inhaling that, and then you pass out. And
you fall off
if
it.
People, if you're skiing and you're getting on the boat, so just make sure the boat is turned off so the motor isn't.
You know, another thing we might make adults aware of is often they feel like they become, there's a sense, a false sense of security when they have a life jacket on the kids, or they have those, what are those things, like little wings, you know what I'm talking about? And those things are not what, I mean, it's fine when you're teaching your child to swim, but it's nothing that you should use for safety precautions on a boat. You know, it does not do it. And I've seen that happen before, where they think, oh, he fell in, oh, well, he'll be okay. Yeah, no, he won't, you know.
I was going to say, I believe life preservers will have a stamp of approval from the Coast Guard.
They do.
So ensure that they check that.
That's a good point. Very important. And another thing that parents need to be aware of, particularly with younger children, is if the child is cold on the boat. You know, you can get cold on that boat. You know, you can be cold, that wind is blowing. And little kids and infants are very susceptible to hypothermia. So you want to try to keep them wrapped up and warm. Whereas, you know, if we are feeling cold, you know, what are they feeling? You know, so that's something else that we might want to be aware of. Okay. What else is there? There are so many things to cover. Let's look at what the factors that are contributing factors that have to do with just playing sports, okay? Because I think that sports, you see little kids from on up to the teenagers will have difficulties. They'll encounter problems. One may be the hydration or the lack of it because they play a lot of summer sports and the teams, the football teams, are getting ready for the fall, but they're practicing in the summer. And you see a lot of them becoming overheated. So that's something else. And are there other things that we might be aware of?
I think having the proper equipment when you're playing sports. I think about kids that are on skateboards and these other new hover things, and even bicycles and scooters, and not wearing helmets. And you know, they get real cavalier and feeling like, oh, I never fall, but it's really dangerous. It just takes one fall.
Good point.
And I see a lot of children without helmets when they're on these devices and bikes and things.
I have helmets as a whole category because when I was reading in preparation for the program, it was emphasized that helmets should be used with any wheel. So
it's a good way to remember.
Yeah, and that's why I remembered it. You know, they were saying that, hey, wheels, scooters, skates, you know, skateboards, rollerblades, bicycles, all of that stuff. There are different helmets that apply to depending on what you're doing. Of course, now that could be costly. Very costly, because a good helmet, you really need to take your child in and have them fit it. I mean, you can't buy it and bring it home. You know, parents may tend to do that. You know, I'll pick them up one. Well, they really need to be fitted for that helmet. So that's something else. Anything else you might...
There's some programs that a couple times a year provide free helmets and do the fittings and everything. Mm-hmm. I believe, is that through the police department?
I think the police department does.
Police department's done that, and they're pretty good about advertising that. It's usually at a community event where they'll be and will actually give out helmets, fit the child, and they're nice helmets. So it's a nice thing, and they usually happens a couple times a year.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So parents could be on the lookout for that.
And you might refer them to the police department, fire department. I would think either one of those would be able to
help,
yeah. Yeah. Well, that's important to know.
Mm-hmm. I would encourage, too, the parents to have conversations with the children that if they are injured, to be honest about it, because many times they have fallen or broken an arm or fractured mm-hmm. a wrist, and they're not honest about it because they think they're going to get in trouble. But to have that conversation that it's okay and we need to make sure you have proper care.
And yeah,
that's a great point.
That is a really good point. I think feeling confident to tell the coach, I mean, this is the season that football practice, all these things start to happen, mm-hmm. and feeling mm-hmm. not feeling embarrassed to say, I really hit my head hard and I feel a little dizzy and I need to sit down.
I think concussions are a big one, and we're starting to become more educated on concussions, mm-hmm. but a lot of times, oh, I'm dizzy for a second, and we go back in. But we really need someone on that sideline that knows how to check for concussions. And they're doing screenings now before the season, and then if you have a concussion, you'll take that same test. Mm-hmm. And I think that every sports team really needs to have that included.
Well, those are all very valid points. And I think when we're looking at the sports, we also need to look at those who are in charge. I mean, the coaches need to have their certification. And we need to make sure that the coaches aren't subtly encouraging kids to work with or play with injuries, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. Because that's the general trend. Oh, you know, I'll tough it out and, you know, I'll play with my broken ankle. Mm-hmm. You see it all the time, mm-hmm. particularly in football and basketball. Mm-hmm. You know, they may have a fractured, you know, wrist or finger or whatever, but they're going to go on and play that game. And I think that sends the wrong message, okay? Mm-hmm. Because then kids feel inadequate and they feel like they need to compete even while they're injured. Mm-hmm. But there's some other things that can be done that the coach can do. We find that they do not warm up and they do not do stretches. Mm-hmm. And that is also very important. Or they don't do enough of them. You know, you should have 10 to 20 minutes, depending upon the sport, mm-hmm. of warm-up activity or stretching. So those are important. And I think you mentioned, Courtney, having adequate safety equipment. Mm-hmm. You know, not just helmets, but clothing, okay? And nutrition, okay? They do need some carbs, okay?
That's right.
They're going to need plenty of carbs, mm-hmm. okay, if that's what they're doing. So there's always something that can be addressed. Unfortunately, when it comes to sports, you can't be too careful. You can't be, too protective.
I'm thinking of closed-toed shoes because so many children are going barefoot in the summer, mm-hmm. you know, mowing the lawns. Mm-hmm. In injuring themselves that way, mm-hmm. Just or walking on glass, or I know we did that as kids, but
right.
It's not a good idea.
Right, yeah, that's true. And even when you're talking about swimming, you need to make the kids aware, and we didn't elaborate on this, on what's in the water, depending upon what kind of water you're in. You
that's
know
right.
what
not,
I mean?
Not to drink the water.
Right, not to drink the water. I know we were in a Panama, and the water was so clear, and it was just beautiful, and I was like, oh, I'm going to go swimming. And then my husband says to me, well, you know, there's amoeba in that water. Okay. And you go right ahead if you want to. But, you know, they do need to mm-hmm. to be aware of, you know, what is available. And also, like lakes. In lakes, it's tannic. Mm-hmm. And so you can't see. Okay, mm-hmm. And I know my kids grew up swimming in Lake Bradford. That's where we lived, on Lake Bradford. So they grew up swimming in the lake, and all their friends swam in the lake. But if any of their friends who just had swimming pools came over, they would look at that lake and go, we're not getting in that, you know. Uh-huh. I remember one time my daughter was swimming. This is just a sidebar, but she was swimming. And she jumped off the dock, and she came up. She had dreads, and there was a fish on her dread, because I guess he thought it was a worm. Okay?
So that's funny.
You do need to be aware of, right. you know, really of where you're. Now, she wasn't, you know, too startled by it, but if you're not familiar with your environment, is what I'm trying to say. It's just like going to the ocean. Well, then you have to be aware of what, stingray and all that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you don't really think about that.
Mm-hmm. And the sinkholes we have in this area.
Yeah. Sinkholes are very dangerous, mm-hmm. aren't they? I mean, every year there's somebody who drowns in a sink, some kid that drowns mm-hmm. in a sinkhole.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Because you just, you don't know what's going on down there.
That's mm-hmm. right.
Yeah.
And you can go under and not be able to come up if it's a small.
Mm-hmm. And depending on the type of water, there are different types of current. You know, if you, again, are in the ocean, you might get that undercurrent that's going to pull you down. You need to know how to swim with it. Mm-hmm. You know, do you swim against it? You swim with it? You know, you do a side. You know, you need to know all that kind mm-hmm. of stuff. But, of course, it goes back to number one. You need to know how to swim.
That's right.
You know? Because when you can't see what's going on, you don't know that maybe I step 1 foot out, and then the next foot, it drops 8 feet. Mm-hmm. Whereas that swimming pool, you are able to see what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We are going to take a brief break, and we will return shortly. If you're just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen, a weekly program for teens and parents and other interested folks. This hour, we're looking at summer safety, and we would be remiss if we did not address insect bites and bugs, particularly here in Florida, and the safety involved with them. You know, mosquitoes are at the forefront. We hear so much about mosquitoes with the Zika, and what, West Nile, and Chikungunya, is that, did I say it right?
I think I got it right,
virus. You know, these are something that we can't avoid mosquitoes. So what, do you have suggestions? What can we do for mosquitoes?
Well, I know we can wear repellents, and especially making sure your children have repellent on. And there's some safe and more natural repellents if people are hesitant to put some of the harsher on young children. Also, I think it's the standing water around your home mm-hmm. or wherever you are, that's just a breeding site for the mosquitoes.
Mm-hmm.
And ticks.
Oh, yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. As far as the repellent, I did some research on that, and, of course, DEET is the most effective. Mm-hmm. And what they're saying now is, of any infant 2 months and under, you don't use any DEET at all. But if they're like 2 months, I think up to 24 months, I think, you can use DEET solution 10 to 30%.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And they're recommending, I think it was CDC, saying that that's okay, you know, because mm-hmm. DEET has been proven to be the best. And there's mm-hmm. another.
Picardin.
That's it. There's another one that you can use as an alternative mm-hmm. to DEET. So we're finding that. But in addition to that, I think there's some things that we can be aware of. Number one is don't wear perfume or scented soaps or hairsprays because they are attracted to that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something that parents can do. You mentioned eliminating the stagnant water, bright coloring.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, wearing bright clothing attracts them, so you don't want to do that. I guess basic white is okay, but other than that, there's a combination also of sunscreen and repellent, and I can't remember that one either, but that is available, and that's something else that can be used.
But also, if you're going to do that, make sure you're not over-applying the bug spray, because you need the bug spray only like twice a day, maybe? I don't know mm-hmm. the exact ratio, but sunscreen you need to apply more often, so be careful.
That's a good point, because we tend to over-apply, okay? What else? Fireworks safety. And from fireworks, we get a number of things, particularly burns, and there can be deaths. Okay, but parents here, again in Florida, we like our fireworks. Florida and Georgia, you know, we do like our fireworks. But I think the basic rule of thumb is you just don't allow children to play with fireworks at all.
None. I think it needs to be adults and everybody standing back and all those safety precautions, but not letting children be the one to light fireworks or do it on their own. And that's hard, especially with teenagers.
But exactly. And, you know, they get away from you and you really can't control that. But how many people, there have been a lot of them who've lost, have eye injuries, have lost their eye, you know, eyesight due to backfiring, I guess.
Yeah, and little children, as harmless as people think the sparklers are, they will, they'll hold them and do them, and then once they go out, they'll hold the where it's still hot and burn their hands. So it's being careful about that, too.
Yeah. There's all-terrain vehicles. I think you see the use of them more during this time of year. Kids are out. So everything is going to be increased, okay? As far as safety, you need to be aware of just about everything that is going on, everything that's possible for them to get into, even pedestrians. Because now kids are out of school, when this airs, they'll be out of school, and you can find them darting out after a ball, where normally maybe they would not have been home. So pedestrian safety and anything else you may add to that, feel free. I'm just kind of going over things.
Pedestrian safety, I think educating kids at a young age because they're playing outside and, like you said, darting for the ball. Let's think about that. Maybe either get an adult or look both ways, just knowing those basics. But for teenagers, I think one of the main reasons we see a lot of pedestrian injury is we have headphones in. Now we have technology. We're texting and walking. Headphones need to come out if we're crossing the street, and I know it seems simple.
I see the car. You see so many people.
We need our eyes and our ears to cross the street.
Well, I think, too, as adults, we need to be more cautious, too, of driving and looking and just being aware and remembering that school is out, so we are going to be seeing more children. So be prepared for that one that's not watching and not hearing because of the earphones.
What about playgrounds? There are a lot of injuries that occur on the playgrounds. Will you address playground safety? Everybody looks at you, Courtney. You're in the hot seat.
I think, you know, when this seems to be kind of a common theme, it's supervision and parents or caregivers being aware and around. I mean, there are accidents that happen on the monkey bars when children, I mean, I think it's spotting children, being under them if they are going to let them do some of those things. But it's just making sure they're supervised and they can avoid a lot of the accidents.
I would suggest, too, is the parent or the caregiver is check out the equipment, you know, sit on the swing, pull the swing, you know, touch things, make sure there's no rust on some of the bolts. So also checking out the equipment before just allowing the children to run and play.
That's true, because lots of times the equipment may not be well maintained. Okay? And they get on there and they're spinning and they're going fast and a bolt comes out, and it's all disasters. So all of that is important. I mean, you look at swings, and they say that the materials should be soft. Even if it's rubber or plastic, should be a soft rubber or a soft plastic. So that's something that you need to be aware of. And something that I had not thought of, but in preparation, you always learn. That's something cool about this. I'm always learning something. What about all this stuff, all this equipment is out in the sun. And it's hot.
Burning.
You know? I mean, and you don't realize that. And you put a little one in the swing. And, you know, they're fidgety. And you think, oh, here, let me adjust. But it might be that it's just too hot. I have seen kids with blisters from being on a swing. And they couldn't figure out. Took a little while to kind of figure out now where did this come from? How did they get these boosters?
Mm-hmm.
But that's something that we need to consider.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Absolutely. I think staying, you know, trying in the middle of summer to stay in the middle of the day to try to not be out in the direct sun. Let that be a time that you're indoors or in the shade between
10 and 6. Those are the hours they say. Wow. 10 and 6 are the most vulnerable and the hottest hours.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can avoid being out between the hours of 10 and 6, that's what's recommended. Of course, then you have the other side. In the evening, that's when all the mosquitoes come out. So, you know, you can't win, you know. So you come out after 6, but then the mosquitoes are out, you know. So you can't win. I know the kids used to always say, well, we'll go swimming in the evening, but that's alligator feeding time, okay? So the alligators come out, okay? So you might want to change and alter that, but in any event, again, I think the key is just being aware, you know, aware of the equipment, aware of the surroundings. So we're just aware of everything. One thing we didn't talk about as far as playground safety is concerned is the surface that they are playing on. It's changed now from when, you know, I was a child. I mean, now they have special surface materials. The surface should be soft and not sharp and hard. Mm-hmm. So that's something to look at.
Okay. We're fortunate to have such wonderful parks here in Leon County. We have some really, really great parks. Tom Brown has that fancy surface, the rubber stuff. And then I know that most of our other parks have the kind of wood chips or some kind of cedar soft. Yes.
Indeed. That's important. In these last few minutes, we've got about a few minutes here, let's talk about poison ivy and poison oak and poison sumac. Who has not had a horrible case of that? Oh, you have not?
I've never gotten it. I don't think I can. My mom couldn't, she always tells this story. She was dared and rubbed it on her skin and she didn't get it, but I would not recommend that.
Well, you know, she must not, because what it is, it's the oil in the leaves, isn't it, that causes the allergic reaction. So
I've had it many times.
I am lucky. I've had it really bad. I remember one time we were supposed to be going on a vacation, and I got it so bad that, you know, my eyes were closed and I had to have get, you know, injections for it. So you can really, really get it. And I don't know what to say as far as how to avoid it, except to learn the leaves. Learn to be able to identify. I don't know if you have any other suggestions. I mean, of course, wear protective clothing, you know, avoid bushy, overgrown areas. And if you wear that protective clothing and you think you have run into it, you need to take that protective clothing off, because you can get poison ivy from the shirt that rubbed against the poison sumac leaf.
One of the worst cases I had, I couldn't figure out how I got it, because I hadn't been out, and it turned out, with the doctor's help and everything, it was from holding my dog. I had a small dog, and he was always out in the, and I was just cuddling him, and I got it all over.
Oh, my Lord.
Oh, I know. Who would have thought? So think about pets and being careful about that as well.
Good point.
And if you get it, really try to get on top of it. And it's with children, not letting them scratch.
That's,
I mean,
that's
really hard, but trying to get on top of it right away.
And hiking, we have a lot of good hiking paths. You were saying the parks, the hiking is awesome in Leon County. So try to stay on the path, because a lot of those are going to be clear, and it's when we wander off that we're going to see it more.
And that's a very valid point, you know, because kids often want to run off, you know. Oh, look at that. And, you know, they want to run over there and just are not aware of the dangers that may be lurking there.
Okay? Snakes, too.
Oh, don't tell me about snakes. My daughter, and this is a sidebar too, was bitten by a water moccasin. They were taking the boat out, okay? And she didn't have her glasses on. And she really needs her glasses. And she looked and thought that it was a stick.
Oh, no.
So she stepped on it. This is true.
Oh,
she stepped on it, and it bit her. Of course. And, you know, they took her to TMH and Mercy Room. They were watching her, and they, you know, they measured the little hole. That's how they knew what it was. But obviously, I guess it didn't inject any venom at this time. And it was a couple reasons they gave us why maybe it didn't inject the venom. Either it had just fed. Now, I don't know. I know nothing about snakes. But it had just fed. Or it was, you know, it was just startled and really didn't inject the... But yeah.
She was lucky.
Yeah, she really was. She really was. But, you know, I was like, what did you do? And she said, well, I thought it was a stick. Because she's always losing. She had lost, as a little girl, lost her glasses in the lake many times. So she decided this time she would take her glasses
off. She won't step on sticks anymore.
No, she won't step on sticks anymore. But that's we always, she's the same one that the fish came up on her hair.
Okay. Does she listen to these casts?
No, she's not here now. She's in New York. But, you know, she knows I talk about them all the time. Because, you know, they grew up in it's a different world now. I mean, it was a world where they would go out with their dogs. And I really wasn't worried about them. I mean, I'm in the Rhodesian Ridgebacks. I knew my dogs were not going to let anything happen to them. And all the little kids that live over in our little cove, you know, there were only like maybe 10 families, but they all knew each other. They'd all make forts in the woods. And we would let them go make forts in the woods and take the dogs with them. We didn't think anything about it. I never let them do that now. I think, oh, my God. Yeah.
I grew up that way. I'm one of seven children. Oh, we just ran free.
Right.
With no shoes on, in the woods.
And you're fine.
And you are fine, and she's fine. Yeah, and she's fine. You know, they would see snakes, and it really wouldn't faze them. You know, it was like, oh, yeah, we saw that snake over there, but, you know, it could be a baby rattler, you know, whatever. Didn't matter to them, you know. So it is a different time, you know, definitely. All right, these last few minutes, what about grilling? Grilling is another safety, summer safety, that we need to be aware of. And I think one thing we need to be aware of is even when you are finished grilling, the grill is still hot. Okay. That's something that I thought about. But do you have anything else that you might add to grilling?
Well, I know with children it's not too uncommon when, especially a charcoal grill that has a lid that comes on and off, putting the lid down and it's still hot and the child just touches the hot lid. I've known children get burned that way. But again, it's, you know, being parents, being around, caregivers being around, somebody supervising if they're young children around the grill.
And another thing with grilling, I mean, is if you are not just grilling, but if you're outside and you're having a picnic, is trying to put away that food that spoils easily.
That's right.
You know?
Food safety precautions.
You know, there's nothing like a horrible case of food poisoning. Right. All you needed is one time.
And especially Florida's hot summer.
I know, and the mayonnaise and the...
Yeah. You know, you need to put it away, you know?
Yes.
Because it will spoil very quickly. Couple more things, lightning. Any comments on lightning? We always hear about lightning occurring, you know, and someone being struck by lightning. Any comments that you might make on that?
The water. Make sure we're out of water when thunder, lightning.
And don't go under a tree.
Yes.
Which is sometimes people's first tendency.
They tend to think, okay, that'll be fine. Very quickly, I know we only have a minute left, car seats. And I thought maybe you might be able to address that, Courtney.
Very, very important. Actually, yesterday I saw a car full of children under five, three in the back with no car seat at all, no seatbelt. It's parents still, and there you can get free car seats, not year-round, but there are times. And again, EMT, emergency services would probably be a great place to call, but you can go to any police station or fire department and have your car seat fitted properly, because that's very, very important.
Well, thank you all. See, we don't have enough time, and I still have a number of little things that I could ask you, but much appreciation to Gina Olson, Megan Reimer, and Courtney Atkins. To my listening audience, tune in next week. Same time, same place to get the 411 on 411 Team.
This edition of 411 Teen was produced by Dr. Liz Hollyfield. Technical assistant, Ken Smith. Audio copies are available, and if you want to participate in 411 Teen or have suggestions for discussion topics, call 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. If you would like to subscribe to 411 Teen Podcast, log in wfsu.org. Check us out on Facebook.